It's summer, and well, that means that many of our minds, if not our bodies, are turning towards the local pool. Or maybe, yes, maybe it's your infinity pool outside the penthouse. I don't know. One thing is certain, that notion of the pool and the role it plays in the Australian summer, it's so much tied in with our sense of self. Our childhood memories of, you know, hot concrete, the splash, the caress of water, the bomb on top of Uncle Harry, the sunscreen, the smell of all that, the chocolate paddle pops. These are the great egalitarian spaces of Australian urban life. Well, that's sort of what we like to think, this sort of utopian idea of bodies and water. Difference removed with the removal of clothing, that sense of commonality in our watery nakedness. Is that as simple as it is, though? Is there a more complex story around the pool in our cultural life? Tom Wilkinson can help us pick through this. He's the Leverhulme Early Career Fellow at the Warburg Institute, the history editor of the Architectural Review, author of Bricks and Mortals. Tom, welcome.
Hi, Jonathan. Thanks for having me on the show.
Can we begin, as so many good conversations do, with David Hockney?
His
painting, A Bigger Splash. Tell us why you think that says so much about the social, the architectural character of the swimming pool.
Well, it's wonderfully glamorous, isn't it, that image? And in my mind's eye, when I think about it, there is a body in it. But of course, the great trick that he plays is that the body has gone. And so although we've got that wonderful sight of the West Coast pool, at this guy from Yorkshire crossed the Atlantic to go and revel in that sunlight and those bodies, let's be frank, yes. There isn't a body there at all. It's gone. And all we have is the trace of the water. So there's something poignant there, I think, which it well illustrates the theme that you were bringing up before, that the pool, despite having all of these wonderful associations, also does have a somewhat darker side.
Oh, do explain. I'm intrigued.
Well, we only have to think about relatively recent events. I wonder if you can cast your mind back to 2015 in Texas. There was an infamous incident where a girl, I think she was a 15-year-old girl, was assaulted by a police officer when she was trying to use a pool. She was black, and the police officer was accused of racism for this incident. And there's a long history of racism and pools and public bathing, not just in the States, but in other countries as well. We only have to think of the wonderfully seductive paintings of Ankh, who did those wonderful views of Turkish baths, that they really exoticize the other and use the image of human flesh to both entice us and to other the person being depicted. Mm. So this, I think this is, it's the fact that we are naked in proximity brings up all of these gut feelings, some of which are quite negative and problematic.
Yes, reducing ourselves to our skin. I mean, if anything was going to heighten the sense of, say, of the other, of notions around race, around colour, it's that exposure. And yeah, we in this country too, the swimming pool has been a scene of civil rights struggle in hot parts of Australia, where they've been exclusive spaces for white Australians. So yes, that is a dark side.
But of course, there is also the reason that dark side is so striking. I think is because in general, the idea or the ideal of the pool is so utopian. There's this Russian saying: "There are no epaulettes in the banya." That's in the Russian public baths. And it's that idea of egalitarianism. But also, I think we can't avoid the fact that sex comes in and has a long history with public bathing. And that certainly adds to the allure of the pool. We just have to think about the Romans, and that they were always at it in pools. If the murals in Pompeii are anything to go by, or the things that critics said at the time. People complained about people carrying on in pools, and we know that a lot of prostitution happened there as well. And more recently, in the 70s and later into the current day, pools have been very important, and bathhouses as well, for gay culture.
If we take that right back, though, I mean, before that, that notion of secularized and eroticized public bathing, there's a sort of a devotional element to the pool, which is perhaps at its, you know, that sense of cleansing of baptism in the Christian culture. This is perhaps where the pool idea begins.
Absolutely, and that adds to the richness of the broth, if you don't mind me using a rather overripe metaphor there, because the earliest pool that we know of is a 5,000-year-old brick tank in modern-day Pakistan, and we're fairly sure that that had a ritual purpose. So cleanliness has always been next to godliness. There's always been, in many cultures, a tradition of getting clean before you worship or for ritual purposes. And there were very important ritual pools in Judaism that continue to be used. They're called mikveh. There's some wonderful historical examples of that in Europe. There's one in Syracuse in Sicily that was discovered under a hotel during renovation work in the 80s, and that's 9 meters under the ground. But today as well, in the Mormon faith, there are some very striking pools, or more like, well, they're sort of baptismal fonts, huge things on the back of sculpted cattle. So yes, the pool and ritual public bathing continues to have a spiritual element for a lot of people.
When did it jump to outright secularism? Is that with the sort of Roman inventions around plumbing? Is that one of the reticulation of water? Is that where it begins to branch out into sort of broader strands of public life?
I think that would be fair to say. And the Romans, of course, were very famous for their baths. They spread them around their empire to even up here to Chile, England, to Bath, named after its Roman baths. And there was a kind of codified behavior about the baths. People did also do naughty things in them, of course, but it was certainly not a spiritual thing, however much the critics of the way behaved in baths lamented that. And the baths were very important for the Romans for political reasons, I think, because they were a public good that was provided by the emperor. So even the poet Martial, who was no friend of Nero's, could say, what could be worse than Nero, but what better than Nero's baths? So maybe some of our politicians should think about that.
In Western culture, I suspect that the bath, the pool, the collective bathing has a bit of a blank spot until modernism and modernism's obsession with health and hygiene. There is, though, a parallel culture. I mean, the hammam, for example, is a thing which has endured in through that entirety of that period. There are cultures which have never walked away from the idea of public bathing.
Yes, and the hammam is a wonderful thing. I don't know if you've ever been to Istanbul or even to Budapest, where there are still baths from the Islamic period there, and they're stunning buildings. The sort of the Michelangelo of Islamic architecture, Sinan, built several public baths in Istanbul. And they're great buildings. You can still use them today. And they've taken that tradition on from the Romans. And when the Ostrogoths destroyed the aqueducts that brought the water into Rome, that filled up the Roman pools, and Europe once again became a place of dirt, I think it would be fair to say, the Islamic world continued that tradition of public bathing right up to the present day, but until Europe was ready to take it back. And it was when I think British diplomats went to the Islamic world and saw this this wonderful culture, they thought we could do with some of that in England. And that's when Turkish bars began to open in Europe. And we still, you know, we still had the benefit of this great boom in pool building that happened under the Victorians. Some of them aren't as looked after as well as they had been. And some of them have been gentrified to the point that they're not really places for everyone anymore. There are a lot of public pools that used to have really fun traditional Turkish bars underneath them in the basement. And you could go there and hang out for very little money. And these days they've all been turned into fancy spas.
What happens in the 80s with the idea of, you know, the supremacy of the market, of neoliberal ideology? How does that change pool culture?
Well, this is a tricky one for me, because in general, I think that most of the changes that happened in that period were not positive ones. But in this instance, I have to say that the introduction of the leisure pool, with all of its flumes, water slides, wave pools, lazy rivers, all of that kind of thing, was a really fun building type that was introduced in that period. And it's been continued today, particularly in Asia. There's a huge example in Chengdu that has an indoor beach. It's like an aircraft hangar, basically, and it's got a fake sky and palm trees. And you feel like you're outside when you're in this building.
The counter to that leisure park model is, of course, the increasing sort of athleticization of the public pool. They're very much these days places for swimming, for doing laps.
They are, and that's true. And there's also another tendency away from the indoors to wild swimming. And I don't know if that's something that's taken off in Australia as well, but it's certainly been very big over here, where people have been rediscovering swimming in lakes and rivers, quite a chilly business in the UK. And that's one that I'm trying to focus away from, because I think we need to rediscover the indoor pool and celebrate its sociable nature. We need to learn to love the smell of chlorine on our skin again.
This is an area of research that you're going to be increasingly engaged in. I think you've got a book project in mind, Tom, around the pool.
That's correct, yes. So I've been doing a fair bit of swimming. It's a great thing to do when you're travelling around, actually. It's always fun to discover the pools of cities that you go to and to observe, like a sort of anthropological experiment, the different approaches that people have to the pool. Nothing could be more different from a Finnish sauna and a German one, for example.
In what way? I mean, give us examples of that, because I think that's a very interesting vector in which to examine a culture.
I've taught myself into a corner there. It might be one of those things that's better passed over in silence.
We may leave that then, Tom, for another time. Look, thank you so much, and all the best with your researches on the pool and those foreign adventures.
Thank you, Jonathan. A pleasure to speak to you.
Tom Wilkinson, Leverhulme Early Career Fellow at the Warburg Institute in London. He's History Editor of the Architectural Review, author of Bricks and Mortals. And as you've heard, there'll be a book in the works looking at the pool. This is Blueprint on RN.